is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Nigeria, I welcome my colleague Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, just returned from the most populous state in all of Africa, one of the richest in the world given its natural resources, and troubled these many years by renegades, by jihadists, and a particular group, Boko Haram. When Gregory and I last addressed this issue, Boko Haram was preying in the north on individuals, on children, on villages, and the army was ineffective in combating Boko Haram. However, things are moving very quickly in Africa, and the question is, who now is preying on the same vulnerabilities of the Nigerian state? Gregory, welcome home. Boko Haram, have they retired or are they still on the field?
Boko Haram is very much still on the field, but the whole original movement of Boko Haram has splintered. It's been like someone's hit an ant's nest with a sledgehammer, and the ants have scattered into a variety of movements. Now, Boko Haram is still there, the rump of Boko Haram, but it's more or less leaderless now because its last commander was killed on the battlefield. But in any event, it's two principal spin-offs, the Islamic State West Africa province, ISWAP, has basically taken the offensive and is moving very heavily into other parts of northern Nigeria. And another spill-off of this is ANSARU, which is another jihadist movement which split from Boko Haram. And that, too, is getting into a variety of other areas. But then you have, of course, the Fulani militia, which have nothing to do with the jihadi movements of the northeast. But they are operating very much in the northwest and north and central north, and including threats to the capital itself, Abuja. And it's actually quite significant that the Fulani, who are predominantly Muslim, are not really supporting the other Boko Haramist type movements and would be prepared to fight the Boko Haram and ISWAP and Ansari forces if they could be satisfied that they were going to get a deal out of the government. And the Fulani are interesting because this is the traditional cattle herding society. It's practices Fumance lifestyle, which is moving seasonally with their cattle throughout the region. And they actually are not an indigenous Nigerian group at all. They began basically in the highlands of Guinea, in the Futajalan highlands, and then spread eastward as far as Ethiopia and then southward into Nigeria. And there are a large number of them, possibly as many as tens of millions in Nigeria, and they've embedded themselves. But the cattle herding activities have been very, very disruptive of traditional farmers who are in fixed positions. And as a result, you have the old situation, as we saw in the movie Oklahoma, the farmer and the cowman can't be friends, and they're always at war. And the Fulani militia are often going in to avenge or protect the Fulani herders. But yet the Fulani militia themselves have a strong political position because the ones who are doing the fighting is the Fulani militia, largely were imported into Nigeria for the last federal elections in 2019 to support the position of the re-election of President Buhari, Muhammadu Buhari, who is himself a Fulani. So you've got this very complex array of forces. And then you have other non-Muslim insurrectionists, like the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, which is looking set to have a resurgence, and others in the Niger Delta area, particularly the ethnic Ijaw people who in the south, or the south-south, as they call it, who are protesting the degradation of their environment by the oil pipelines, and they are now feeling that they're being precluded from even protecting those pipelines from leakages and so on. And so there's an uprising beginning again there in the south-south.
You tell me there are new groups and there are new threats to the government, but I wanted to touch upon the Army, because when we talked about this in depth, it was several years. I beg pardon, Gregory, but I remember the Army being various. And one particular unit in the north that was dispatched against the Boko Haram was not reliable. Has that all been cleared up, or is the Army now reestablished?
Well, the Army is doing the best it can, but it's fighting this massive flow of ants around the country, where there's just too many threats for the Army to be able to concentrate its forces to protect any single area. So essentially the threat has become far too great for the armed forces. There's still a morale problem in the Army in particular, because of corruption and mismanagement within the Army. What it always seems to be is that the insurgents seem to be better equipped than the Army. And in some areas, when they know that there's an insurgent group about to go through an area, particularly if it's a Fulani militia, the Army commander in the area with the limited forces is likely to pull his forces aside so that the insurgent group can go through, as long as there's a commitment that they're not there. They're just transiting and not going there to create difficulties. One of the things we see is that the Nigerian Army personnel, the troops, are generally equipped with about two magazines per man to go into any situation. And the rebels have got seemingly unlimited ammunition. So when you're going into a serious firefight and you don't know how long it's going to last, and you know you've only got two magazines of AK-47 rounds, then you're going to be very careful how you use them, because the last thing you want is to find yourself without any ammunition at all. So you're going up against a strongly motivated insurgency force. And in pretty much all of the instances, we tend to think of these jihadists or insurgents, whether they're Fulani or Boko Haram or Ansaru and so on. Those insurgents are highly motivated. They are not entirely made up of ignorant, starving illiterates from the north. A lot of these groups now have numerous highly educated personnel, some of whom have worked in government and many of whom have been in the Nigerian Army themselves and have defected because they felt that the Army had more or less betrayed them in terms of leadership support, not getting enough food, not getting enough of any kind of support. So you've got a militia, the Fulani or the jihadist militias, often very well motivated. They know how the Army operates and they know how to fight it. They have better equipment at a troop level than the Army. So it's very, very difficult. And air power is difficult to concentrate on some of these insurgent groups. So the armed forces themselves, in order to fight this, are going to have to decide on priorities, because they can't tackle all of these threats at once. They have to start rebuilding from a position of strength, and that means gaining a concentration of forces and improving their battlefield management. Largely now, both the jihadis and the Army are still relying on cell phones for their tactical communications. Now, it's one thing for the insurgents to do that, but if the Army is doing it, they're not getting secure communications, firstly. But secondly, they don't dare close down the cell towers in order to blind the militias, because they need those cell towers themselves. So they're really going to have to come up with some new tactics and new approaches to technology. They've bought a lot of technology. The Army and the Air Force have got a lot of unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, including a few unmanned combat aerial vehicles, which are the armed ones. But now, of course, the militias are getting their own drone capability, because they're using commercially available drones, which are very effective to give them reconnaissance positions. So the reality is that the Air Force, for example, has been buying expensive equipment. They bought a lot of 15 very, very expensive Tucano turboprop light attack aircraft, which should be very effective, but they haven't been able to get all of the weapons for them from the United States. So these aircraft, which have cost billions of dollars, have not been able to go into operation. So they're still unused. So the advantages, if you like, of getting better equipment, better organization and the like, still are not paying off for the Nigerian armed forces. And all the time, the threat is expanding and expanding and expanding. And there's the suggestion, of course, that the government of President Buhari, at least at the state house level, the leadership level, is really not committed to the fight against them, and particularly not committed to the fight against the Fulani.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He's just back from Nigeria, and the story of the most populous state in all of Africa is something we'll explore going forward. But right now we need to move to an update on Ethiopia, where there's an ongoing civil war and fresh news from the BBC about more trouble. I'm John Batchelor.